This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, listeners. Nick Helm deliberately started chugging on some water so that he wouldn't be able to talk at the beginning. And now he's got a mouthful of water and he's trying not to spit it at the microphone.
Hello. Sorry about that.
It's gone all red.
Sorry about that, guys. What happened was I was being really professional, Nat, and I was like going, oh, more professional than normal this week, where I was like, oh, bloody hell, the show's going to start in 20 seconds. So I better... What I do is I do like the devil horns with one of my fingers because... one of my hands because basically...
That's clever.
You've got to do... When on the volume levels on the deck, the sound desk,
there's the two
volume things are far apart from each other. So I use my index finger and my little finger, and I slide them up. And at the same time, with the other hand, I press the button for the ident, and. Which meant that I didn't have another hand in that 20 seconds to have a sip of water so that I could do some professional broadcasting. And all I wanted to do was be professional, Nat.
I don't think anyone noticed.
But I have to say, I think probably not talking on the radio as a radio host is the least professional thing that you can do.
That's true.
It's on the top list. top of the list. Anyway, hello, my name's... Nick Helm.
My name is Nathaniel Metcalf.
And together we are the Teenage Mutant. Oh, what? Let's start again.
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
Hey, listeners, how you doing? Oh, sorry, it's a one-way conversation.
It certainly is, you can't hear it.
Wonder how many people around the country, around the world, actually.
Shouted at their radios.
International, shouted at their radios. We should probably do that. We Will Rock You, Bohemian Rhapsody last week.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And there's a brilliant section where an actor portraying Brian May says, I just want the fans to have something to do. And I think maybe that's what we should be thinking about. We should go, are you all right? And then
you've got to shout back.
And then they've got to shout back at their radios or something like that. But we'll work on that.
We'll plan it.
How's it going, fan clubbers? Doing all right, Nick and Nat?
That's a good one. Yeah. Say that.
So, how's it going, fan clubbers?
Glad to hear it.
That's good. Good.
Did you do it at home? I hope you did. I can't hear you. How's it going, fan clubbers?
I can't hear you. How's it going, fan clubbers? Come on. Come on, clubbers. Come on, clubbers. Who's our favourite fan? Clubberlang. From Rocky III.
Yes.
Mr. T. oh, no. Oh,
we started early.
So my name's Nick. This is
Matt.
My bread.
My main man.
my brethren, Nathaniel. And... oh, no. It's not a show.
Is this on?
And we're...
Have we started yet?
I'm glad we're doing these 5-minute warm-ups before we go live.
Good.
We've done 4 minutes.
It's been good so far.
And you're listening to Fan Club. Punch that like button, hit that subscribe. if you are on iTunes, we're on iTunes and Spotify. Feel free to subscribe. And I don't know if you can subscribe.
Subscribe.
I don't
iTunes.
Listen to podcasts. I find it degrading to have to beg. But actually, since we've been mentioning it, we've almost doubled the amount of reviews we've had.
It was worth doing, I suppose.
It was worth sullying Sally, hang on. What's this? This is all stuff from last week. Good afternoon. Oh, we've got some fan. Okay, so we're going to do a weekly thing where we do, but not at the top, right? Let's do it mid-section.
Yeah, I was going to say, do it in a bit.
Do it a bit. Don't open with masturbation. Save that for after dinner.
It also seems like we're desperate for content, doesn't it? If we go, what have you done? What have we sent?
So much fucking content, mate. Got content coming out of our ears. Oh. Anyway, I'm in a good mood. Are you in a good mood?
I am. I couldn't get me special sandwich this morning. Couldn't get me breakfast roll.
We were in a rare scenario today where I had a meeting at 10 a.m. in Costa Coffee around the corner, and Nat turned up towards
the end of this
meeting.
Towards
the end of the meeting.
Gate crashing their meeting. Yeah. Wanting a breakfast sandwich, which I was going to get from competitors of theirs.
You can take it.
Starbucks.
I like to call them Tarfucks.
Yes.
Yes.
And they didn't have a breakfast sandwich that I wanted, so I went
to... I don't ever say that. I just wanted to be controversial.
Yeah, no, I get it. It worked, though. So couldn't get any sandwich.
What sandwich would you have got from Starbucks?
I've got one of their breakfast roll things. They do like a breakfast roll, all day breakfast roll, I think it's called. It's going to get one of them.
Sounds like an absolute fucking nightmare. They do tins, don't they, called all day breakfasts?
Oh yeah, like in supermarkets.
They also do tin, you know, like tins. You get a tin of food that will last forever. It'll survive a nuclear war. And you get an all-day breakfast. Or there's one called the Full Monty. And you get it's beans.
I wasn't going to get that.
It's bean-based.
Bean-based, but with like a fried egg stuck in it or something.
It's got beans, and I think they have sausage.
I can see that already.
They have bacon. They have black pudding. And something, some horrific thing, some horrific nightmare come to life called an egg nugget.
Egg nugget? And it's all floating in the beans, isn't it?
Oh, fucking hell. It's just, it's basically, it's like someone's eaten an English breakfast and then vomited into a tin and then sealed it up and then are selling it to fucking morons that think, do you know what I want? I want...
I'll tell you what that sounds like to me, Nick. A metaphor for Brexit. Lovely bit of satire on the radio.
Do you know what I was thinking? And I want to say it now before I get it. Can you do your Jeff Lynn impression again?
Jeff Lynn. Oh, it's just like, got me tellies on the stage. Was that it?
ELO. Oh, it's brilliant. Is that, come on, do some more. I think you should talk like him and I should
all
talk.
Day.
You're really good at impressions, that is the thing. You did an impression earlier before we went on air.
What did I do an impression of? I was doing an impression of Billy Connolly.
Yeah, that's right, and it was really good. Let's hear your Billy Connolly.
No, I feel like... I wonder what Billy Connolly would say if he was...
I was walking!
That was Nick, that wasn't me.
Fuck that! Jesus Christ, I was walking! No, I can't do it. I used to be able to do it all
can
right.
Can I do
one.
It? I feel like I can only
I
do it.
I was walking and they rebuilt. I can't do it.
I can't do it.
All right, ducks. I can't do that either. I'm not very good at impressions.
Well, I feel like I can't do it to order. Rory Bremner.
The only impression I can do, and I'm quite successful at it, is of a happy person. Do it all the time. Keep it light. No, I'm actually I'm in a good mood these days. We were talking about something that you were saying, and then I went off on a...
Oh no, I was just talking about, I went and I had to get me, it's not a great story, is it? It's just basically that. I had to get a bacon roll.
Just absolute fucking nightmare. Just like a breakfast.
Just like anything, please. And it got like a sort of, end up with like a burnt roll with a slice of bacon in it.
They really did a fucking job on you, mate.
They did.
How much did it cost?
Well, altogether with a coffee, it was like £6.
Although, I went to see Suspiria yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
I went to a screening of Suspiria. I'm not allowed to say what I thought of it.
It's embargoed.
It's embargoed till next week when it's no longer relevant. But I went to see.
Yeah, this is on so-called FUBAR Radio.
Fucked up.
Uncensored broadcasting.
And I went to see Spirit yesterday, and I said, I'd like a large Diet Coke, please, at the Hospital Club in Covent Garden. I'm not a member. You have to sort of like sign in at the desk, and then they say, second floor. And I said, oh, go through and get a drink. You're a bit early. Sometimes I'm early. And they said, go through and get a drink. You're a bit early. I said, okay, I will have, can I get like a large Diet Coke, please? They went, yeah, certainly. And they came back and they said, that'd be £5.75.
Whoa.
And I actually watched them undo two of the little glass bottles and pour them into a big glass. And I was just like, oh, I didn't know that that's how you were doing it. There's absolutely no way on earth I would pay £5.75 for less than a pint of Diet Coke. I could buy 4 litres. I could buy 6 litres for about the same amount. Yeah. I reckon.
You should have brought in six litres into the hospital club.
It's quite a posh place. It's a nice place. The screening room is great. I remember it's the same screening room that me and Esther watched our short Elephant in.
For the first time?
Not for the first time, because
you'd seen it a million times.
We wrote it and directed it and I edited it.
I'd just seen it though.
I hadn't seen it up to that point. We haven't seen it in front of an audience before.
How many does it hold, the screening room?
About, I would say, the most would be 40.
Okay, wow.
It's lovely. The seats are great. But we watched our short film in there, which went on to be quite... I don't know what the word is. Successful? But
it was a BAFTA award nominated.
It was, but people really liked it in the end. It's one of the only things that I've done that's had almost 100% universal approval rating, 7.5 on IMDb.
By the way, I gave you 7 for that on IMDb. So,
but when we watched it in the screening, it was like we watched it with a load of other comedy shorts, and everybody laughed at all the shorts, and then our one came on, and nobody laughed at it at all, and we were just like, "Oh no, what have we done? What have we done?" But it just turned out it wasn't that sort of thing. People liked it in a different level, apparently.
But where are those people now, Nick?
Well, one of them was Bob Mortimer.
Right, so he's done quite well.
He's done really well. Yeah. Absolute hero.
Yeah.
It's kind of crushing, sat behind one of your heroes.
Laughing at everyone else's one and then
and
stopping
then
laughing.
Absolutely, the blank expression. Oh, Matt Berry was there as well. He didn't laugh.
Who else was there who didn't laugh? Any big names?
Who else is there?
Any friends? Personal friends that didn't
Sarah
laugh?
Sarah Pascoe was there. Was Sarah Pascoe there? I'm not sure if Sarah Pascoe was there, actually. One of her shorts was on. But I don't think she laughed. But Sarah Pascoe is always lovely about stuff that I do. So, hello, Sarah, if you're not listening.
Hello, if you're not listening. And can I just say a big hello to everyone who's not listening? And can they say back to us?
How's it going, fan clubbers? Great.
And how's it going to people who aren't fan clubbers?
We've got a little bit of fan mail here.
We have. We've got
good afternoon, Nick and Nathaniel. We are struggling. I heard on the comedy podcast. Comedy podcast devotees Facebook group. Is that a thing?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Okay. That you were now on email. Yes. Since 1998. You're just still on my Hotmail account. You just have to be there, Days. What?
You just have to be there.
Oh, and I thought I'd ask you what your favourite film remake is of all time. Dirty Rotten Scoundrels or The Thing for me? That's a lovely...
Good question.
Thank you, Fran Jolly. That's a lovely
question. That's fan club. Love the show.
It's a lovely question. We're embargoed, though, so we'll have to talk to you about it next week.
Is it good? I tell you, I like my.
That does imply that Suspiria is my favourite remake, actually.
It does, yeah.
It
might be. You can't say if it is or isn't, to be honest.
I can't say whether it is or it isn't.
Is?
Am I not allowed to say anything? Oh, can I say I liked it? I can have an opinion, but I just can't give spoilers or details.
You aren't going to spoil it.
I have an opinion. Oh, I loved it. I saw the Suspiria, as we know.
Because
we mention it every week.
But yeah.
Dario Argento is one of my favourite directors.
The great thing is, though, it didn't have a Goblin soundtrack, so we won't mention that this week.
There's no Goblin soundtrack.
We're not going to mention Goblin this week.
Tom York is no Claudio Simonetti. That's all I'll say.
We've done it now.
But the fucking Suspiria remake is... if you like the original, then just... You have to go in and just expect a completely different thing. And I think that is its strength.
I'm looking forward to seeing it. Very excited about
it. It's so different from the original, which is a
good thing. I think that's good if you're doing a remake.
I went into it expecting it to be something completely different. And it's so different from the original that you just go, fucking hell, it's its own thing. But it's also, it's a companion piece. But it's almost the opposite on every level to the original. And that's okay. All I'll say, but I loved it. Yeah, I loved it. But there are buts, but I'll talk about it. Well, let's talk. Let you watch it next week and then we can talk about it. Ad infinitum.
Infinitum.
Yeah.
We'll talk about it in a future episode of Fan Club. So stay tuned next week. Subscribe. So hit the subscribe button if you want to find out.
Punch those likes.
Yes. We're getting better at this.
We are getting better at it.
Professional broadcast. Who was it? Radio 2? Did Chris Evans leave Radio 2? Are they looking for a new breakfast host? No?
Zoe Ball's got it.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, but... you know.
Unbelievable. We're a shoo-in for that.
She can't do it forever, mate.
Yeah.
They're going to drop the ball at some point.
That's right. Yes!
That's what I'm talking about. That's a one spicy meatball. So can we get that as an item? That spicy meatball thing.
That's great.
I'll come in the week and I'll record a proper one and I'll press it every time I do a joke. It'll be the least used button on the thing.
I'm a big fan of the remake of Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the 70s remake.
With Donald Sutherland.
Donald Sutherland.
Do you want to know a fun fact?
Yes, please.
Not seen any version of Invasion
no.
of the Body Snatchers. The Donald Sutherland one. I like old Donald Sutherland. You know when you see pictures of people when they're younger and it sort of like weirds you out a bit.
Mm.
There's pictures of Steve Martin when he had dark hair.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And he used to be kind of like a Cat Stevens type hippie guy with a beard.
Yes, yeah.
And a long kind of flowing hair. He looked like he used to be in Creedence. Actually, he looks a lot like the lead singer of Creedence Clearwater.
Right.
And we used to, and then I think he went white haired overnight and then his whole image changed, but he was a fucking horn dog.
Well, he's really good looking, isn't he? You sort of forget, I think you don't think of him as that.
Steve Martin and Harrison Ford look so similar to each other to me. I just think there's Steve Martin, Leslie Nielsen and Harrison Ford are all kind of like a similar thing. I think maybe it's like you go you start with maybe Harrison Ford, and then you go to Steve Martin, and then you end up with Leslie Nielsen. But I think probably Leslie Nielsen facially looks probably... They don't look... No.
But I guess Leslie Nielsen is old Hollywood, isn't he, as well? So I guess he's probably... Technically, would have been a very good-looking fella as a young man, because that would have been how it worked.
What a nose. Leslie Nielsen's nose is so fucking spectacular. I just, you know, you put him on Mount Rushmore, and I would climb that. It would make the end of North by Northwest. What are you talking about? She's frowning at me like I'm talking absolute shit. Google Leslie Nielsen and have a look at his fucking hooter. It's fucking...
have a look at his...
Do it like Jeff Lynne.
Have a look at his fucking hooter.
Jeff Lynne.
Jeff Lynne on Leslie Nielsen there.
Jeff Lynne on Leslie Nielsen's nose.
Maybe we'll get a phone in later from Jeff Lynne to see how he... What his opinion is on the new Suspiria.
How's it going? I can't do it. How's it going, ducks? I love it.
Hang on, here we go.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go. Harrison, so yeah, someone's Harrison done it. Someone's actually made this comparison before, obviously.
Yeah, but I mean, they look very similar to each other. Mm. It's a weird thing.
It's almost like, it's funny that Steve Martin had to go so kind of wacky and out there to almost distract from the fact he's actually a good-looking guy, almost. It doesn't... Like, that guy coming out, you'd probably be like, nah, what's this going to make?
If Steve Martin was here now, I would fuck the shit out of him. I mean, what a good... I just like guys that make me laugh. So fucking, I love Steve Martin so much. And Harrison Ford's a funny guy as well.
He is. He's got quite a dry sense of humour, hasn't he?
Yeah.
But sometimes I think it is that...
She was my wife!
That's a really good Harrison Ford.
It's all right. She was my wife!
For years, I thought Harrison Ford had the worst agent in Hollywood. That, like, almost throughout the 90s, he just seemed to do really, like, why are you doing that? What are you doing that
Air Force
for?
One is a real head-scratcher. It's just like, you're Harrison Ford. Why are you making a Die Hard knockoff? Yeah. Like, that's for Jean-Claude Van Damme. That's for fucking Casey Ryback himself.
Exactly.
Steven Seagal.
Exactly.
Steven Seagal.
And it felt like... Did you want me to acknowledge it?
Why is Harrison...
Steven Seagal.
I didn't quite say it right the first time.
Steven Seagal.
Steven Seagal. I'm doing it, Casey. I'm doing it. Yeah, I know. They're all under siege. She's jumped out of a cake. I'll tell you, when I rented Under Siege out for a birthday party...
Is this going to be an Erika Eleniak story?
Of course.
What birthday would this have been?
I would have been 15, maybe 14. Okay. Of course, we all knew that Under Siege was going to be a shit film. But we also knew that Erika Eleniak, the girl from Baywatch that we all grew up with, goes topless in it. So when we were all growing up, we were like, let's go to the beer shop and get our Under Siege. And we can legitimately say, oh no, we want to see Steven Seagal cracking skulls. We want to see Steven Seagal cracking gulls. Oh my God.
Hello, ducks. I mean, a seagull.
It's Jeff Lynne and Steven Seagal.
What a great show this is.
Oh my God. I just looked at the time and it's just like, we haven't gone anywhere near any of the things that we were going to talk about.
It's all right. We're talking about Under Siege now.
Under Siege. So
good story.
Went to the video shop, and it was back in the day when you had like a tracker on your thing. It would be a timer, and if you press 0 once,
yes.
If you pressed it once, it would reset it all to 0, the time code. So that you could...
Rewind back to that point.
Yeah, and if you press it twice, it would be, like, imprinted on it so that it would stop automatically. And when we got our thing, Under Siege, it was, like, halfway through the film, you know? Like, when you get the tape out, you can see on the spool that it's halfway through.
It says, be kind, rewind. This guy hasn't rewound. That's a bit weird.
This guy hasn't rewound it. So what we did was I popped it in the VHS, and it played automatically, because that's what they did. And it was just Erika Eleniak jumping out of a cake with her tits out, and watched it, pressed eject, took it back to the video shop. I never watched the film. I've seen when you watch Under Siege 2 Dark Territory, it's such a cynical film because his female lead in that is his niece.
Yes, yeah.
So
it's Ashley Judd, isn't it?
No, it's Catherine Hegel.
It is Catherine Hegel, yeah.
And so she can't go topless because it's his niece.
And didn't they make it a 12, the second one?
No, it's an 18.
Is it?
Yeah, the first one's a 15 and the second one's an 18.
I saw the second one at the cinema.
So in the second one, they have like some... they're at the Pentagon and they have some technology that lets them zoom in. It's basically Google Earth. but they invented it. You heard it here first, guys.
Invented by Steven Seagal.
What? You can zoom into anywhere? Oh. I'll Google that. And so what they do is all the scientists are in the Pentagon, and they just keep zooming in, and there's a woman sunbathing in her garden topless. Yeah. And you go, come on, guys, grow up. just grow up. We're all, it's an 18, right? We're all adults, you know. Oh, you know, I could...
Oh, I like the ending of Under Siege, Steven Seagal has a knife fight with Tommy Lee Jones. Mm. And what I like about it, it's all building up to they're going to have a big sort of... They're going to have a big fight at the end. Of course they are, because he's the big hero and villain. They're going to have a big fight at the end. Mm. What I like about the fight in Under Siege is Steven Seagal has obviously said, well, I'm not losing the fight to Tommy Lee Jones. So Tommy Lee Jones, I don't even think, gets like a punch in. He just basically beats him up. So he doesn't get it. Like, there's no advantage of Tommy Lee. It's not even going like he nearly wins and then loses.
Yeah.
There's no drama to it at all. Tommy Lee Jones faces off with Steven Seagal, and Steven Seagal beats him up.
Tommy Lee, this was the same year that they did The Fugitive, right?
Yeah.
And I remember there was another Tommy Lee Jones.
Same director, isn't it? Is it?
Andrew Davis.
Yeah, it is, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. That's probably the Under Siege was 92, maybe, and then...
that makes sense.
Fugitive was 93.
Yeah.
And I think because Tommy Lee Jones wasn't such a big deal, and then The Fugitive
came
out. Yes. And then Under Siege came out on VHS, and then it was just like, oh, Tommy Lee Jones. And there was a thing, because Tommy Lee is obviously the drummer from Motley Crue, and I think there was another guy that's kind of like got a similar name to Tommy Lee Jones, if it's not Tommy Lee Jones, that was in Best of the Best.
Oh, okay.
So there was kind of like, at the time, there was a lot of
confusion
in the playground.
About who was...
No, just our sexuality in general. But now you mention it, the Tommy Lee thing was confusing. I've never made that comparison. Tommy Lee Jones clearly didn't have any knife skills.
No.
He didn't go for any training.
No.
And neither does Steven Seagal, because he makes it all up on the spot.
Well, there was when Steven Seagal's videos were coming out, because they really tried to launch him as an action star, didn't they?
He made one good film.
What was that one?
I think it's Out for Justice.
Is that the one where it's him? The one I've seen is Hard to Kill, I think. Is Out for Justice the one with like where it's like a Yardie gang? Is it that one?
No.
Which one's that?
That's Hard to Kill.
I thought that wasn't Hard to Kill.
Out for Justice is the one with, what's he called? He's not Frederick Forsyth. William Forsyth is the bad guy.
Okay, okay. I like him.
And he plays a character called Gino Ginelli. And he's something like that. What's Steven Seagal's character called? No one's even fucking listening this to me. What's Steven Seagal's character called in Out for Justice? It's like Gino...
In Hard to Kill, he's called Mason Storm, I remember.
Yeah, right. Casey Ryback in Under Siege.
Mason Storm.
That was the biggest he ever got, was Under Siege.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that was his zenith.
But he started making films like Out for a Kill. And you go...
That doesn't even mean anything.
Out for a Kill... Where's just going out for a kill?
Isn't there one called Half Past Dead?
All right, drugs.
Detective Gino Foligno.
Gino Foligno. I mean, fucking. My name is Jay Show Fellatio. Detective Gino Foligno. The action in Out for Justice is just genuinely a good film, and also it's one of those things where you couldn't really swap him out. It's not like, oh, this is.
You could put another action star in.
Yeah, this is a Jean-Claude Van Damme film, but they've reworked it. And it's not like a big budget... I think that's Andrew Davis as well, actually.
Maybe.
It's not like a big budget Schwarzenegger film, and it's not kind of like a faux intellectual Stallone film, and it's not a film about someone that kicks a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's literally... If you're only going to ever watch one Steven Seagal film, I think it's Out for Justice. And then all of his others are genuine shit. But Out for Justice was like, he made a couple of films before that. And then it was like his third one. I think it was Joel Silver. And it's kind of like, it's got that glossy early 90s kind of thing to it. It's actually genuinely, it's got an interesting story. It's got, he's good in it. And it's got some really cool fight sequences and some sort of like some good kills.
See, what was a nice one that they did? Do you remember Executive Decision with Kurt Russell?
Yeah. I'll tell you this. So me and my dad in the 90s, so I was a stroppy teenager. Still am in many ways.
You're still a teenager?
Yeah. on my, officially. my TV age is 17.
Oh, right, okay.
So when I was a teenager.
Very disappointing when you did an uncle and you got cast as the uncle.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I just thought, not yet. I'm not ready.
You thought you were going to play the kid in the audition.
That's what I auditioned for.
Yeah.
I spent a lot of time in the audition rooms. Yeah. Just sat next to lots of little boys.
Yeah.
Eventually they came to me and they said, your name's not on the list. So I just ran out the door. what was I saying? So I was a strappy teenager and my dad was like a room hoverer, right? A doorway hoverer.
Yes,
so he'd be
watching
Die Hard and he wouldn't fully commit to actually watching Die Hard, but he liked Alan Rickman. So he would sort of like hover by the door and you'd just go, just fucking sit down or fuck off, right? But just watch the thing, right? In the nicest possible way. Because it's kind of distracting when you're watching a film. And he's like, Alan Rickman is saying stuff and he's laughing and you go like this. And then one week it was, there was a Steven Seagal film. I think it was probably Under Siege 2.
Right.
And my dad came in and he sat down. And we used to watch action films together. And my dad seemed to really like Under Siege 2. And then, so I started renting out Steven Seagal films. And me and my dad would, like, every Saturday, we'd watch Steven Seagal films together. And then Executive Decision came out at the cinema. And I was just like, fucking hell, Steven Seagal. So I took my dad to go and see Executive Decision because, you know, my dad loves Steven Seagal. We went to the UCI in Hatfield. And we watched it. The film is so average. It almost feels like a TV movie.
It does feel like a TV movie.
David Suchet's the main bad guy, right?
Yeah,
you just think, fuck off.
I do like it. I did like it a lot when I saw it. But it does have that sort of... I was talking to my brother about it the other week, that it has that thing where the credits appear as the action's going, like it does on TV.
Yeah.
So the opening credits are just sort of appearing on screen as if it's like... And it does have that thing where it feels like you're watching a much cheaper movie than it is.
One of the executives made a very bad decision.
Hmm. Yes! Have we got the spicy meatball?
That's a wonder spicy meatball!
We should get a recording of that. That is good.
I think that was Joel Silver as well.
Yeah, I think
but they were really
been.
Pushing. Right, so the big twist is they do like...
It's
in many ways,
spoilers.
Executive decision is... in many ways... The Executive Decision is the Alfred Hitchcock Psycho of the mid-90s action movies.
It certainly is.
Where they really pushed hard that Steven Seagal was in it and he dies within the first 15 minutes.
Yes.
Which is a very brave move. And I love Kurt Russell, but not in this film.
I tell you what, that got me very much on... Are we going to talk about...
I just wanted to just finish off my dad anecdote. So
of course.
We watched Executive Decision and we stood in the lobby afterwards and my dad just bewildered... just says to me, oh, Nick, can you stop making me watch Steven Seagal films? He's got a head like a potato. And he was so like...
Aww.
And I was just like, I thought we were bonding and the whole time...
But
he
thought he was bonding as well, Nick, you see, didn't he?
He thought,
this is something Nick likes. I'm going to watch this film with this man in it who's not very good.
He's not very good, but
he must like him.
My kid's got no taste. I guess he just really loves... oceanic wildlife.
Yes.
it's not a good joke, but
that's all we've got.
We've got so much to talk about this week, and we've done none of it.
I know. That's good, isn't it? I think it's almost like an experiment. Maybe not one that should be broadcast, but certainly a fun experiment.
I'm going to start taking a photo of my
list to talk about.
List to talk about, and I'm going to start putting it on
Instagram.
And then at the end of it, we'll compare notes and see how much we actually got through. Done nothing. Except for the only thing I've talked about is Suspiria, which I was told I'm not allowed to talk about.
We're going to talk about it more. Next week.
Yeah. Do you know what? What were you going to say?
Executive
Decision.
Executive Decision. Oh, no, I was going to say that when Seagal launched, you on his VHSs, you would get a little short film about Steven Seagal that would be on the front of all his releases that would be a little thing introducing you to Steven Seagal, and you'd have him, like, fighting those poles and things, you know, those training things where you got those sticks, and he's, like, doing all his kind of... banging into him and stuff.
Flapping about.
And so they're really trying to launch him, I think, as like a big...
Do you think that's how he developed his fighting style?
Fighting sticks.
The way he fights is he sort of like has kind of like very relaxed wrists.
Yes.
And he sort of like slaps people's hands. Like, in many ways, like he's flapping.
Yes.
Like he's a seagull. In a man suit.
Play a track now. This would be great.
This is great. But one thing I will say about Steven Seagal is didn't make a lot of good films.
Woman to take his seat, he got the power, oh, she got the need. She spends her life through pleasing up a man, she feeds him dinner, oh, anything she can. She cries alone at night too often, smokes and drinks and don't come home at all. Only women bleed. Only women bleed. Only women bleed. Man makes your hair gray. He's your life's mistake. All you're really looking for, an even break. He lies right at you. You know you hate this game. Slaps you once in a while, and you live in love and pain. She cries alone at night too often. He smokes and drinks and don't come home at all. Only when. Only women bleed. 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 Only women bleed.
Kept punching him till his dick fell off, and that seems to get rid of him. Anyway, we're back. So it's just been brought to my attention. Thanks everyone for punching those likes and hitting the subscribe buttons.
Yes.
Coming in, it's all very good and well giving us five star reviews, but if you don't make a comment to back it up, it means absolutely nothing to me. One fucking cunt a while ago gave us a fucking 4-star review, which is fucking the most petty, fucking pointless thing ever. One thing that's really hacked me off this week, and I think that they were being funny, right? We think they were being funny, but what they've actually done is they've lowered our stock, right? Someone else came along and gave us a second 4-star review, obviously a fan, because they've been listening to the fucking show. You just think, yes, cunts, right? Yeah, fucking giving us some of their fucking 4-stars review. Not good enough, Hearst Head. Do you know what? I condemn you to 1-star. You get 1-star.
That's less than four.
It's less than 4. Do you know what?
I think we've encouraged people to give us 4.
Even worse than that. Yeah, even worse than that. I'm not going to give you 1-star. I'm not going to give you 1-star. I'm going to give you 2.
Yes. Maybe because I'll give you
no
4 stars.
No one goes to see a 2-star show, mate.
No.
I'm talking bitterly about my experience in Edinburgh. yeah, it's really great. We've got some fan art that we're going to have a look at now. So we've got some music for that. So let's give that a go.
I can't see it. It's not on my screen. Hang on. I have seen it. What's in the gallery this week?
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's lovely.
Good. I like it. Keep sending in that fan art. It's lovely to look at. So, what are we going to talk about?
We're going to make that a regular feature. If you want to send us something, our email is fanclub@foodbarradio.com.
It just feels like a lot of this show has been either pointless content or it's been begging for approval.
Well, that's it. And that's what it is every
week.
That's
not why we made it 2 hours. That's not why we bumped it up an hour. Bohemian Rhapsody, saw last week, got dragged there. Right, absolutely do not want to go and see Bohemian Rhapsody. Mm-hmm. Looks like an absolute piece of shit. They're all wearing charity shop, joke shop wigs.
Yeah, I've seen
it just looks fucking awful, right? And we were talking about it with Michael Legg, and it was just like, oh, Bohemian Rhapsody is going to be shit. I was with Elliot, the kid from Uncle, and we had 2 hours to kill in the middle of the day, and we went around all the cinemas. We went to we started at Covent Garden Odeon.
Yeah.
We walked down to the Curzon.
Yeah.
Then we went to the Picture House. Then we went to Cineworld, Prince Charles Cinema,
yes.
And we ended up at View, right? And there was nothing other than Bohemian Rhapsody that started at that time of day. And I was just like, fucking hell. And he was just like, he was up for it. And I was just like, I really don't want to go. But we might have to leave early, so fuck it. And we went and saw it, and I just thought, you know. He said, you know, worst comes to worst, we can just walk out. You know? But it looked like sort of like a Channel 5 kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah,
the trailers just made it look fucking awful. The beginning, we sit down. It starts as a 20th Century Fox logo, and they do a Queen cover of the 20th Century Fox fanfare, and it's undeniably, unmistakably, it's Queen, right?
Did they get Brian May to do it, do you think?
I would... I, they, they were executive producers on the thing, and I would find it weird if they didn't. But it's unmistakably, oh right, that's what Queen sound like. You know, it's not a Queen song, it's a 20th Century Fox fanfare. But it's that, and then literally that came on, and then I was like, I went from fuck this shit to I'm 100% on board. And I loved every single fucking minute of it. I just thought it was, I loved it. It is kind of like soap opera-y, but I loved it. One of the things that I really liked about it, it just made me, I just thought, what's the main guy called? Rami Malek. Yeah, I thought he was just incredible in it. Like, he was really great.
Well, every clip I've seen of it, you do go, I mean, my brain, because I'm not familiar with him having been in anything else, my brain just goes, sure, Freddie Mercury.
But when he's wearing aviators, he looks exactly like him. And when he's not wearing aviators, he's got really big eyes, and you're just like, well, it doesn't quite look like him. But yeah, it's just, and fucking halfway through it, you're going, who the fuck is playing John Deacon? And then you realise, oh, it's the kid at Jurassic Park. It's the little boy at Jurassic Park. He's grown up, and now he's playing John Deacon. And he's got, when they're doing the Live Aid bit at the end, he's got this really, he almost does like the box step while he's got the bass. And it's fucking, I really enjoyed it. And it's, they don't go really deep, in depth into Freddie Mercury, but it's not a Freddie Mercury biopic. It's a Queen biopic. Mm-hmm. And
so you do get the backgrounds of all the band members?
Yeah, it focuses on Freddie Mercury, but that's because he was so beloved, and he is still in England. But one of the things about it is that in America, they were not so big. So I think they've always been fairly big in England.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know that Lee Evans did the Bohemian Rhapsody routine where he won the Perrier Award.
Yeah.
And
Wayne's World.
But Wayne's World, when they did it, they had to really fight to get it in Wayne's World. Mike Myers. Mike Myers is in the film.
Mm.
And he plays the guy that turns down Bohemian Rhapsody.
Right.
And you go, ha, 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 ha. So Wayne's World sort of like brought them back to a bit of prominence in America. But basically, they weren't big in America. So what this film is basically doing is they're like going, guys, this is our legacy. And they've done sort of like a fairly sanitized version of the Queen story in order to go, in order to sell themselves in America.
Introduce themselves to
America. Reintroduce themselves to America. They were really big. And then they did I Wanna Break Free, which was a cross-dressing video.
Yes.
And it wasn't a cross-dressing video, but they all cross-dressed in it.
Yeah.
And America was so outraged by it that basically it killed their career.
That is mad, because in England, that's such a kind of staple of, like, of course.
It's Benny
Hill,
yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And in America, they were like the sexual demons, which I would love to be called a sexual demon. Anyone? Thanks, guys. And
that's Fan Club.
That's Fan Club. Right, we've got a guest. Anyway, so Bohemian Rhapsody, if you haven't seen it, go and see it. I think it was... if you like Queen, I think you'll love it. And if... I know there's some people that have got problems with it, but I think that that's a small minority. I think it's a crowd pleaser.
Yeah.
And I genuinely... And I'm not coming away from it thinking, oh, that's my favourite thing I've ever seen. But I came away from it going, I enjoyed that 1,000% more than I even anticipated.
Yeah.
And by the end of it, I was like, I spent the last half hour.
It's a little bit of fun you didn't think you were going to get in your life.
I spent the last half hour trying not to cry in front of a 17-year-old boy.
For the first time?
Let's get our guest on. So we've got, is it this one? Line Hold, yeah? Okay, so we're joined now on the phone by Jason Byrne. Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Hello? Well, he's on tour, and I'm sure he's enjoying it. He's an amazing performer. We've got some technical difficulties here, so now we're going to give...
Hello?
I have...
Hello, Jason?
Hello? Hello, Jason? Hello. Hello.
Oh, I think we're going to call him back.
Going to call him back. He probably hung up because he was waiting too long.
We could keep saying this. We could pretend we've got everyone on the phone.
And we're joined in the studio now by Jeff Lynne. Oh, no. We could actually fake that really accurately.
Yeah. Not a Ducks of Montauk. I'm still on the outer ring, the last week. I should have come in then to do the promotion.
So since watching Bohemian Rhapsody, they've simultaneously released it on kind of like download on Sky and stuff, and I have been thinking about downloading it and just like owning it forever and watching it again. Because like since I saw it last week, I have thought, oh, I'm a bit down in the dumps. Do you know what I fancy? Watching a bit of
Bohemian
Rhapsody. And I went back and I rewatched the Live Aid footage.
Would you buy a Queen record now?
I've got Queen records. Okay. I'm not a Queen fan.
Okay.
The thing that put me off the thing was it was
the
like,
film element, the biopic.
Yeah, it was just kind of like, it looked kind of like a cheap sort of biopic. But that's what put me off it. But when I actually got in there, I was just like, oh, do you know what? I fucking do like Queen. You know, I'm not like John Robbins level, but I do like Queen.
You like a bit Queen.
I've always liked Queen, but what's my favourite? I do like Fat Bottom Girls. But what's my favourite Queen song?
Yes!
I think Bicycle's funny. Bicycle Race. But speaking of stuff that I've seen more than once, Adam Sandler Netflix special.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I watched this in a week on your recommendation, but I've seen a few people talk about it and I wasn't...
It's kind of like in the comedy, there's a lot of buzz about it in comedy, which I'm sort of annoyed about because I've stood by Adam Sandler through thick and thin, and this was my reward for like 20 years of bad films. And, and I love it. I've seen it twice. I'm going to watch it every Friday, I think. Every Friday night. It's my Friday night thing. Forever. I think it's one of my favourite things. One of my favourite... I think it's the best Netflix comedy special I've ever seen.
I want to talk more about it maybe next week.
Yes, but next Netflix week. But all I'm saying is that it's really good, and we should probably say that we've seen it and we're both fans of it now. But jump on the bandwagon.
Now.
Start the
bandwagon. Watch it now and you can talk about it and tell us what you
think. If you think you hate Adam Sandler, fucking watch the fucking Adam Sandler Netflix special, and he's reintroduced himself to a whole new generation. We're joined now on the phone by Jason Byrne.
How are you? Can you hear me?
Yes!
Oh,
yes!
Oh, mate, the master of suspense,
The new Alfred Hitchcock.
How are you doing?
Did you think I was on the phone a second ago and I just wasn't?
Yeah, you weren't on the phone. I mean, you literally...
Yeah, oh, listen, I tell you where I am right now, right, okay, and people can Google it after this. I am at Wyming Brook, and it's a site of special scientific interest, and we don't know what the interest is. We're on tour. And we keep driving in really cool places. We're just outside Sheffield, and I literally pulled in to get 5 bars in the Lake District, and I'm at a site of special scientific interest, and the answer is at the end of this path where I'm standing, and we don't know what it is.
Oh, that's exciting.
It is exciting.
It's like a little mystery for you.
What do you imagine it might
be? What could it be? Like, it's a forest and a river. What's so scientific about that? I don't know.
Maybe there's like a spaceship at the end or something, or something like a... Something alien technology.
I think
sitting down there.
I think nature is its own reward. How long have you been on tour for?
Well, forever, Nick. You know how it goes.
No, I've done one tour that lasted 2 months.
Oh yeah. Well, I've only got 7 gigs left now, and I've been gigging since September. So you tend to do, as you know, you play the Edinburgh Comedy Festival, and then after that you go, oh, I'm never talking ever again.
Yeah.
And then you go on tour and you talk again a lot.
Yeah.
And but to keep us going on tour, I always tend to try and do stuff. Like at the minute, I'm obviously at an accidental scientific point of interest.
Mm-hmm.
But we go to, and now we're heading up to some sort of underground cave. Well, an underground cave. Have you ever heard of an overground cave? So we're going down into a cave somewhere near where I'm standing, and it's a river that goes through the cave, and you get on a boat and they bring you through it. So, bit of excitement.
That is exciting.
You know? Yeah,
that is really good. So is your tour, or because when I went on tour last year, some cunt fucking organised it so that we were going from Wales to Scotland to Brighton, right? And it was just like, so we didn't get through fucking nothing in the day. We were getting up at like 6 a.m. and driving all day so that we could do our tech get in before the audience came in. So have you got kind of like a sympathetic tour schedule where you're going kind of like to places that are near each other?
But it's taken years to get it right. It's taken years. You see, okay, when your promoter promotes the gigs, right, and does what you said, organises them, they only see a name on a sheet, and it only takes them a millisecond to read from one name to another, and they just think that's how fast you can get there.
Yeah.
They don't actually look at maps or the logistics of it.
Yeah.
They just see, they see Brighton, Aberdeen. Yeah, I was able to say that fast.
Maybe they do it in alphabetical order. They do the places in alphabetical order. You got Aberdeen, Brighton, Bristol. Yeah. So then they try and find a place with Cardiff.
It was fucking... Where did we go?
No,
we were somewhere... Go on.
Yeah.
you were so unsure when you said yeah. We did a place that was near Winchester, and then we travelled to Scotland, and then we went back down to Winchester, and you go, you're fucking pricks. We were right next door. I mean, we could have had a day looking at fucking stones in a field. And
I love when the audience look at you and they go, I think he's a bit tired. Oh, fucking, oh, really? This is what they do, Nick. This is how the promoter gets sorted out where you go on your tour. There's a map in their office and they get their own shit and throw it at the map.
Yeah, right.
Whatever it
takes. Yeah, you just have to be really polite. You have to be really polite all the time and always enter emails with thanks very much. And otherwise, if you catch them on a wrong day, they go, right, yeah, we're going to give you Cornwall and then Ireland on the same day.
Yeah, I get confused. Yeah,
keep going.
I keep telling you, you can read that quite quickly. Also, you can follow it quite quickly with your finger on the map, which is good. I mean, There's as the crow flies, and there should be as the promoter points with his finger.
Flies. Yes. 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 You've nailed it.
But yeah, so tonight we're in. You've got to go to Stockton. Have you been there before?
Stockton on Tees. Yeah, I know it. It's near Darlington, isn't it? That way.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's just a place, isn't it?
Living in Ireland.
How are you getting there? You drive? Do you drive, or do you have a driver?
Well, we have a very posh tour manager driver called Luke Malloy with the best beard that's ever been created.
Luke Malloy, yes.
You know Luke, Nick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Luke worked in Edinburgh and he works for Phil McIntyre and he's got he looks like a pirate. I've actually got my own pirate that comes around. Brilliant.
That's good. And he does all your driving for you.
The long pirate beard. Yeah. And he drives and does everything. And we were in Edinburgh there recently because we were gigging in Glasgow and a child asked, could he say hello to the pirate? And we said, yeah, absolutely. Say hello to a real-life pirate. You know, I insist on constant entertainment when I'm on tour. You know, that's what happens.
Sounds
then,
lovely.
Oh, you know, we then ended up in a European Bowling Championship tournament once.
Oh, that's good. Were you in the tournament?
No. Now, if it was my father or my mother, I would have said, yes, I was in it. But we were beside it, playing bowling. So we felt like we were really in it. But we really went.
Bowling.
So we did that, yeah.
But like bowling.
Yeah, bowling.
Like tenpin bowling or like lawn bowls.
Bowls.
Well, that was tenpin bowling. But if you ever want to go to, it's called Alley Bowls or something like that. There's one in Edinburgh. It's the oldest indoor bowling alley in the world or something. Or I don't know what it is. Or it's probably Britain.
Oh, that sounds nice.
And there's an old alleyway in the pub, which and I think they call it Skittles. Yeah, it's called Skittles.
Oh, that's not quite
that's
the same.
In the back there. Oh, it's in the sheep's head. That's where it is. H-E-I-D, the sheep's head, which is up beside Archer's seat.
Oh, I know that. Thank
you.
Yeah.
A bit of bowling.
Do you know what, though? It's kind of like one of those things where when you're in Edinburgh and you just want to get away from doing comedy, so you think, I'll do the stand in Glasgow. But then actually doing bowling has never occurred to me.
No.
But doing something out, yeah, that sounds good. Oh, do you know what?
Something to remember.
It's almost worth booking an Edinburgh run just so you can go, so you've got an excuse to go and let off some steam during bowling.
Do it like a British tournament rounds. And the gigs are in the way, so the bowling's what's important. That's always good. Mm. But, yeah, you know, I do whatever I can. And I also book gigs that are like just near nice areas, like Exmouth. Have you ever been there? There's a gorgeous beach like along there. So, and I do a little bit of running. I haven't run for a while, but man, I was bad. Do you any exercise, Nick? Ever, lads?
I do. I do. I used to do boxing until I hurt my hip. So now I do weightlifting, and I'm a professional bodybuilder. I'm not a professional bodybuilder.
Professional?
I'm a good bodybuilder, though.
No one gives you money for it.
No one gives me money for it yet.
Right. Be on your way.
I'm at the moment, I'm building up to being Seagal. And then I'm going to build up to be Van Damme, then Lundgren, then Stallone, then Schwarzenegger. Yeah. And so eventually I'll be Schwarzenegger. But at the moment, I'm almost Seagal. Seagull.
So you're just going to get older and more kind of flappy muscle. That's what they have now. Kind of fold over.
Mate.
Muscles that wear big are just hanging there now.
Fucking, don't aim low, aim high. I'm talking prime.
Actually, this is weird because my tour manager, Luke Malloy, with the fantastic beard, we can always send a picture to you and you can put it on your website, was the under-15s British deadlift champion.
Oh, wow.
I know.
How much did he deadlift? I feel like Joe Rogan.
I don't know, but normally it's heavy. They normally say they lifted heavier than their body weight. They normally say that, don't they?
That's impossible, isn't it?
But that doesn't.
Is it impossible?
What, if you're a midget?
What, to lift more than your body weight?
Yeah.
No.
Isn't it?
No.
Okay, I'll give it a go.
No, but I can lift a small woman at the moment, but I'm working my way up.
A small woman?
Yeah. I think I'm like...
Is that above your head, Nick?
No, that's not a deadlift. That's not a deadlift. A deadlift is basically you hold onto it with your arms and you use your legs to lift. And I can do.
Oh, yeah.
I think I'm on about 70 or 80 kilograms. Not that great. I've met people that can deadlift more than me, but that's not part of the thing. I'm not doing it to compete with people. Part of the reason is I'm trying to block them out of my head and just sort of concentrate on my own thing. Keep it light. What's the best thing? What's the best thing? We've got to wrap up soon, Jason.
For depression. What's the best thing with depression?
It's exercise.
Deadlift people. Deadlift people you hate. That's a good one.
Imagine your enemy is dead and you're lifting them. That's
lifting them above your head in victory.
And throwing them into the fucking sea with all the other shit. Fucking cunts.
There you go. There's for a record. Next.
Just finally, what's the best thing you've done while you're on tour?
Oh, let me see now. What's the best thing we've done while we've been on tour?
Come on, let's rattle through this, Jason.
last week we went. Yeah, we did. We found another cave in. I don't know where I was, but actually, tell you what's cool for actually. No, I just skip that. Is if you go onto my YouTube channel, you'll see me, my tour manager, opening up hotel rooms before we know what the room is like.
Oh, that's
so
nice.
We found some cracking. We've been staying in stately homes and gay crashing weddings and 50th birthdays. So we've had a good fun doing that.
Oh, that's amazing.
So some of the stately homes have been just. So what we do is we don't stay in the main city, and for the same price, you can stay out in some stately home with some mad old people. It's great, right?
That sounds fun.
So if you go onto my. If you go onto my Facebook, actually, that's where you'll find us opening all the doors.
That is.
You know, and the way we review places is I have this thing about the staff being up their own hole. If they're too far up their own hole, they don't like it.
Sure.
But they can be, like when you go to if you go to a really posh place like the Dorchester, I've only ever stayed there once, right? I was doing Graham Norton or something, true, and there it was brilliant. And they're not up their own hole. They're actually good fun because they know how to deal with whoever they are there in front of.
Yeah.
But you know, the middle of the road, they're not trampy and they're not very posh.
Basil Fawlty, like that.
Yeah. Oh, I tell you what, the Hotel de Van, they're so up their own hole. They're not happy to see you. And then there's no room numbers. It's called Le Campagne or Aishap.
Yeah.
Or Le Bisque Lit is the name of your fucking room. So you gotta. So I review it by saying the staff are either very far up their own hole or out their own hole.
And then my major thing is. And at Hotel de Van, they do bathtubs in the middle of the bedroom. And you just think, I don't want to make eye contact with anyone while I'm cleaning my anus.
And then the other big thing is where a hotel or a place you stay in can get really, like, done in is interfering with my sausage. I have an interference with sausage kind of chart. As in, like, you know when they put apple in it or leek.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. 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 I see, I, for one, am very Irish.
Yeah, I know.
Sausage. That's not. Yes, but dick or cummy bum. But the thing is, I don't like anybody interfering with my sausage. I like a plain, boring sausage. That's what I go for.
Sure. Okay, well, you heard it here first, people. Yeah. Jason Byrne likes an untampered sausage.
And you are at, for the next few days, you are in Stockton tonight, then tomorrow Salford.
Yeah.
Canterbury on the 11th. Yeah. Three nights in London, yeah. Leicester Square Theatre on 15th, 16th,
London,
17th.
London.
And
no, London, you will stay, you will get this right.
And then Brighton.
And then a short hop to Brighton on the 18th. That's quite a decent, that should be all right. Canterbury to London to Brighton's all right. Salford to Canterbury's a bit harsh.
Easy.
That's a bit harsh.
Well, I'm going to go Canterbury to Ireland because it's a big 4-day gap and then I'll be back.
Oh, well, that's on you.
I'll be back to the land of non-interfered sausage, which is Ireland. Well, come to Ireland where nobody interferes with your sausage, apart from priests. Anyway.
I mean, come on, mate. You're going to go and you're going to leave us with that to clean up. Enjoy the rest of your tour.
Yeah,
thanks.
I'll leave it right there.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming on.
Thank you, boys.
Enjoy the rest of it. Right, bye. Bye. What an awful man. So we've got a guest coming on after. We've got the band Solomon Gray are coming on afterwards. So we're going to play a Solomon Gray song and we'll talk to them in 4 minutes.
As people get-
Nick and Nat.
Fire!
Nick and Nick Helm and
the Fire!
Sorry, I had to put up one of the.
I don't think anyone noticed.
I had to put up all the crossfaders and they're going. Just had to put everything up. And,
is everyone's microphone up?
It's good. It's good. Okay, right. Here we are. We're joined in the studio now by my name's Nick, and this is Nat. First rule of fan club.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't do it. First rule of fan club is tell your friends about fan club. Second rule of fan club is be professional at all times. We're joined in the studio now by Solomon Gray.
Hi, everyone.
The band Solomon Gray.
Yes.
Also known as Joe Kennedy.
Yes. Or Joe Wilson.
Joe Wilson?
Yeah.
What? Is that your stage name? One name for your friends, one name for your fans.
I
just want to put it out there right now that I'm Nick Helm no matter the weather. I don't know who I'm talking about, whether it's some piece of shit or someone I like, I'm always going to be Nick Helm. And
Are we the piece of shit in that analogy? Joe Wilson.
I feel it's a bit unfortunate that you've started on such a bum note there.
Oh, it's really good to see you. I was really excited.
I was very excited to see you, but I'm absolutely good. And Tom.
Tom Kingston.
Tom Kingston. That's and
also a stage name.
Is it? What's is your it? Real name?
Yeah, my real name's Pete.
Why isn't it?
No, I've got a different surname. But
no, let's not go into this.
No, let's not go into
what's your fucking surname?
My real name is Bootle.
Bootle?
Yeah.
No wonder you fucking changed
exactly.
it to Kingston, mate.
Yeah, but why did he change it?
It's not called Bootle on Thames, is it?
I feel like we're not supposed to talk about this, and yet it's intriguing.
Suddenly
there really is no story that's interesting.
Hang on, here's a little bit of context, right? You've just listened to a Solomon Gray song, Guys at Home, and unless you do what I do and skip that bit. because let's face it, life's too short.
Which is what it's all about.
When I'm really listening to myself do live radio, I just always generally skip the guests and every time Nat talks. So it's just
and
like
the music.
And the music. It's just a mega cut of me talking to myself. It's very, and do you know what? It's quite profound.
So it feels quite profound.
Wait till you hear this Steven Seagal stuff. Because
you know, that's great.
I regret the Steven
level
Seagal
one bodybuilder.
Stuff. My name is Steven. No, I know.
You've reached level Seagal.
So you are an incredible band. You're an incredible band.
I love you for saying that. Thank you, mate.
No, but you are an incredible band.
Can we borrow some money? we would like you to invest in a small structure which is called Solomon Gray.
Solomon Gray are an incredible band. I happen to know Joe. What would you say? Socially?
We made your bum tickle.
So,
do you remember you came to that gig?
No.
The first gig you came to, which was in North London. And we had that huge bass issue where the bass was so loud.
Oh,
and you went,
fucking hell.
Thank you so much for that. It felt amazing.
Well, I went to see your gig and the bass was so loud.
It was so hard.
It vibrated my sphincter.
Inside out.
It was absolutely incredible. I never wanted that gig to end.
We go the extra mile. Yeah, we just held that note for you for about 4 minutes.
It was, it was brilliant.
It was really hard to play.
I mean, I think that is a really good tip to any bands out there that starting out,
yeah.
It doesn't really matter how good your songs are, just turn the bass up and people will keep coming back.
Well, there's a frequency that makes you sick, there's a frequency that makes your bum go inside out, and it's worth playing it at least once in every gig.
Seeing you live was one of the most incredible gigs I've ever seen. Not because of the music so much, but your tech that does the lighting was absolutely spot on.
It's different every time.
It was so good. I took photos of the lighting because I thought, I want lights as good as this. They are incredible.
Yeah, we had the same team working on the Union Chapel gig that we just did.
Because I went to see you. I went to see you in Stoke Newington and in Angel as well. I think that what your music is it's kind of like it's very sort of like sensory,
mm-hmm.
so it's sort of like it sort of because your singing is very beautiful and the music is very beautiful, and it kind of like puts you in like it's almost like a trance-like state when you're listening to it. And then and I'm not saying it's boring, I'm saying it's like it's real good, right? But you're being a trance.
you're still going like a trance-like state
and then but because of the way the lighting is, it's kind of like you don't really get a good view of who you are.
Yeah.
And so you're kind of like, so it's like a light show, and then also the singing is so beautiful, but it's also sort of in the mix with, it's like another instrument. So so it's not, you're not even kind of like, it's not like you go, that's a great kind of like catchy lyric. It's like it's just this onslaught, and you come out of it and you feel kind of like sort of it's very moving. And it's also, you come out of it feeling not exhausted, but you come out of it feeling like you've been through something. Yeah. I really, as in terms of live experiences, I think it was great. You've just done the Union Chapel, haven't
we? We have, yeah. It was a bit of a dream. I was talking to someone about it yesterday, actually. It all seems like a bit of a dream. It was a bit weird.
Yeah. Is it something you've always wanted to do then?
Well, it's one of those venues in don't live in London that we're like, yeah, we want to play there one day.
Yeah, yeah.
And now it's, and we've done it now. It's all over.
Nothing left. Nothing left.
I tried to do I Think You Stink at the Union Chapel, and they turned me down, hands down. They said, absolutely not. I think they thought it was about devil worshipping. Yeah. But in a way, it is. But I went to see. Claudio Simonetti's Goblin.
What? No one seems confident with the word. What is it?
Claudio Simonetti.
Oh, right. Did you take him? Or was it your recommendation?
No, he wasn't there. He took me the first time, actually.
Yeah.
We've been going to see Claudio Simonetti's Goblin.
You know it now, for several years.
but we went. I went to see them do the score for Suspiria.
At
the Union Chapel.
Oh, wow.
And that fucking... It's just like the setting is so incredible. Right. It's like they do comedy at the Union Chapel.
And yeah, I was just thinking,
it's such a beautiful venue to just come on stage and scream cunt in.
Yeah, is it hard to... Have you done it with comedy? No, you haven't.
I've done it with comedy. Well, I wouldn't say it's hard to play, because it's like a Daniel Kitson type audience where they're all kind of like very right on, and they're... comedy fans, so you're not like winning people over. But what I would find difficult about it is that there are sort of like deaf spots in the, you know, when you have like blind spots kind of thing.
Luckily we didn't have enough people in though to fill those spots.
Oh really? It's like you have deaf spots where it's kind of like where they can't hear you and you can't hear them, and so it's kind of like or maybe you can't hear them, so you can't tell whether there's like huge areas of the audience that are either enjoying it or not enjoying it.
Yeah, right.
But tell us about playing at the Union Chapel, because it's such a fucking... If you've not been to the Union Chapel, guys, you should go and see something at the Union Chapel, because it's an amazing venue.
It is. It's a really special venue. And loads of people that we were talking to afterwards, actually just before we started as well, because there was quite a few friends and family there, because it was, you know, it was a big deal for us. It wasn't the norm. Hadn't heard of it. I couldn't believe that many people hadn't heard of it, because I used to go there loads when I was younger. But it's pretty much, it's not too far from where you grew up, is it?
It's not only that, it's round the corner from where I live. So I love gigging
there. Right, exactly.
I do FUBAR because it's round the corner from my house, and the Union Chapel is equidistant the other side. It's a 5-minute walk, and they pay quite well for the gigs as well. So minimum shoe leather, maximum residuals.
But no, the gig was great. I mean, you know, there's a whole other dimension to doing this particular set of songs, and the amount of, I mean, we'd played Warsaw and we went to Prague just beforehand as well.
Is this what is this, your second album, or is this what your tour is, or is it a mixture of your first and your second album, or
it's a mixture but
basically second but with a little peppering of the first one?
Do you have a set show at all the gigs now?
We did for this tour.
The way we do it's a miracle we actually get to the end at all. And if we change the order of things, that would be
disastrous.
I wouldn't be here. I'd be in therapy.
Yeah, we had a few little malfunctions, but it was You know, there's so much stuff, and it's only the two of us. It's like two Dick Van Dykes. Imagine, if you will, two Dick Van Dykes on stage.
In what respect? In what respect?
So, in like doing, you know, at the beginning of Mary Poppins, he's kind of playing everything, and it's sort of like there's like five or six different instruments for both of us to get to.
I get you now.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought you meant two Dick Van Dykes would be brilliant because he'd solve those crimes really quickly. There'd be two of them, wouldn't there?
No, no. I'm talking the other years, the early years, the early Van Dyke.
There's probably at least
about 10 different things to play on stage, and all of that goes through the computer, and it's, you know, it's comedy gold. It's great.
Yeah,
it's tough, but it was a great tour, and playing going to Prague and Warsaw before was just amazing. Yeah. You know,
and didn't you go to America?
Yeah,
we did a couple of years ago.
Yeah. It's incredible,
amazing. We were very lucky to play some of the best venues in the States, which we did not feel and were not qualified to do. there we were. It was pretty incredible. We got to play the Beacon in New York, the Hollywood Bowl.
Did the fucking Hollywood Bowl.
The Greek Half in full. Berkeley.
It doesn't fucking matter. Did the fucking Hollywood Bowl. Do you know what? I saw Elvis Costello at the Hollywood Bowl, and it was the shittest thing I've ever paid money to see. It was absolutely fucking
appalling.
Why?
Because it didn't fill the space?
It was sold out.
Was everyone talking?
So I went on a dream holiday where we went to New York State and watched Alice Cooper support Motley Crue.
I was admiring your T-shirt. It's
and,
fucking great.
And then wearing an Alice Cooper T-shirt, and so we went because my favourite band is Alice Cooper, and we watched him support Motley Crue, and then we went over with my girlfriend at the time, and we watched Ben Folds support Elvis Costello, right? And her favourite band is Ben Folds, and Motley Crue were fucking shit, right?
Really?
They were just the shittest thing I've ever seen.
I always remember their track. Was it Get the Fuck Out or This Party's Over? Was that the tune?
Not Motley Crue.
Is it not? What was the tune that... Oh, it doesn't matter.
They did Kickstart My Heart, which...
Yeah, no, but I was trying to remember there was a bit in our schooling. Do you ever have those things where people play one tune of a band that they love?
No.
Do you never do that?
No, but maybe I just wasn't invited.
All right, never mind. Move on.
It would have been Do the Bartman. It would have been Do the Bartman.
Are you serious?
I love Do the Bartman.
Oh my god,
that's my first single.
So, that was my first. Come on, give me a cuddle. That was my first single. That was exactly the same time as me. I can't believe that. Every time we get asked that fucking question, and I'm always like, Tom's probably got a really good one. Everyone else has a really good one, and I feel like that's part of my first buy.
Do the Bartman, yeah.
Yeah, totally. I went off and bought that. I went to the shop and brought it back. That was such a moment. Yeah.
It was in a purple sleeve. And these guys are looking furious right now.
Yeah. Do you have to do a cover of it? Do you have to do a cover of Do the Bartman?
What, we're just like, who really?
Yo, hey, what's happening,
really
dude? I'm the guy with the rep for being rude. You go, yes. Yeah, because in many ways, in the early 90s...
That was sort of pre The Simpsons being on telly, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Started with that. It's actually quite a breakthrough campaign. Yeah,
if you wanted to see The Simpsons, the only thing that you had really was Do the Bartman, and you'd get like a four-minute Simpsons episode, and then you can like go, that was kind of like, you know, rubbing it in your gums, and you're like, I need some more.
It's a bit rushy, but I love it. Can I get that guy's number again?
I remember when The Simpsons started, it felt like it was quite a thing that you couldn't see it, but you sort of knew about it happening in America.
Yeah, totally. You could rent
we didn't have it at my house. It was across the road. There was one guy that had the actual channel that you could actually watch it on, so we'd always get in there.
You could rent like two or three episodes per tape from Blockbuster Video. I think it might have even been two episodes, and it cost just as much as a film. We've been had to go at, and it's when you do that, it just drives everything to a halt.
I've got nervous again.
So we go and see, the fun thing about it was the fact that I got to see Alice Cooper absolutely smash it in a support slot to a lesser band.
Yeah.
And then Ben Folds did the Hollywood Bowl, and it was just incredible. And then Elvis Costello, he did it with the Los Angeles Philharmonic Orchestra. And it was as Spinal Tap as it sounds, right? It was like, he did sort of like a jazz fusion odyssey of where he impro, like Ben Folds came out with the orchestra and he kind of like did the, and he does that as part of his set, right?
Oh, so they used the orchestra as well? So if you got it, if you paid that much.
It was just Ben Folds, and he did stuff with the orchestra, but he kind of like reined himself in, right? Because he's a genius.
He'll
really get
on that piano.
Yeah, but like then Elvis Costello came out, and he didn't really do well. And he came out. He wore this little red hat, and he did
in his little red hat. No,
because it comes in, right?
They say if you catch him, you get to make a wish.
So he didn't do any of the songs that anyone knew, right? Yeah. It was packed, right? And he didn't do any songs that anyone knew. And then people were so angry, right? People were like ripping up their tickets, like their team had lost, right? And then at one point, he did for one of his encores, he did Watching the Detectives, right? And he rearranged it with the orchestra, but he did it in a way that was so like
was it like scat singing or something?
Yeah,
like?
it was
groundbreaking.
He went, she was watching the detectives. Bam! Bam! Bam!
Oh, no.
Bam! She was watching. And at one point there was a quiet bit.
It was such a
bad gig that we were at Hollywood Bowl, and I kept watching the screens, and then I had to keep reminding myself, just look at the architecture while you're here.
Right. It's amazing.
At one point this person, really angry, right at the back, just shouted out, "Hey! Nice red hat!" It was such an incredible
and is it?
You see, you doubted me sprinkling that little detail in there. Boom! Pays off in the end.
And you can hear it on the live CD.
It was absolutely, it was like such an incredible gig.
That's the most cutting thing you could say. He must have been like, oh.
Shit, after all the work I've done.
He couldn't take the hat off. We would all know. It was
checking these backstage going, well, it doesn't really matter, you know, we've got the New York Philharmonic Orchestra. It's gonna be amazing.
Finally,
it's gonna be absolutely amazing. Yeah. Pick up my hand. Already?
It's a bit little, but it doesn't matter. It's fine. No one will notice. They're ages away.
So but it's such an iconic venue, I can't believe that you played that. So how great was it?
It's a bit weird, I'm gonna get like a bit techie here, but when you play an outdoor venue, you don't get anything back because it's all just going into the air.
Yeah.
So there's a...
Same with comedy.
Yeah. So I think...
And actually indoors as well for me.
Yeah. Funny that.
Okay, moving on.
Weird sound in those venues.
I find in venues in general,
just feels empty.
Yeah. Oh, deaf spots.
Cinema party.
Lots of deaf spots.
There's a lot of deaf spots.
Yeah. Yeah. So, no, it was amazing, but I think we probably enjoyed the indoor ones a bit more because you get something back from the room,
yeah,
and that gives you a little tingle. Yeah. But just like the aura,
easy.
I was 2 decibels away from shitting myself.
Yes, precisely.
4 stars.
Yes, 4 stars.
4 stars.
Could have been 5.
Could have been 1. Could have been a 1. Yeah.
I loved your new album. I've just given it 3.5 stars.
Tingles. Yes.
And I've just given myself a number 2.
It's a good way of reviewing a record.
Came in hard at the number 2 spot.
Yeah.
Anyway. Sorry.
So yeah, it was pretty amazing, pretty surreal.
Yeah, but technically, there was
let's delve deeper.
What happens? Remember, this is we can't have you on, and you've been to the Hollywood Bowl.
I know.
Genuinely, yes. And then we just made jokes about shitting.
No, yeah. No, that's exactly how it should be. Yeah. It shouldn't be any other way because that's what it's like.
You need to be relatable.
But yeah. What happens when you do outside venues is that the breeze will come along and it will take any atmosphere away. Yeah. So you go, what's like even one of the good gigs like Latitude, you do it, and every single comedian at the comedy tent comes off going, oh, I've just died.
Yeah, yeah.
And everyone thinks that they've died. Actually, you go, no, you did really well. It was, it was really good. And I came off and I was just like, I think I've died. And nobody looked at me. It was weird.
No eye contact.
You hadn't. I swear I hadn't. It doesn't matter what Chortle say.
They're now three put deceased in brackets after my name.
Who reviews a festival? Oh, unbelievable.
Yes.
But it is. I don't think it's something that people in an audience consider.
No.
How hard it is for us to get up there and do it in an outdoor venue.
How dare they? Yeah. How dare they merely listen to the performance?
But that's it. But they're probably having a great time, right?
You just probably can't. It's just difficult to tell.
You can't tell. Yeah.
But the other thing as well was that because we were doing it was, you know, all of the venues apart from Bar from Manchester were seated. And so luckily, just because we were a support act, we had this amazing thing where pretty much the doors were shut and people were sat down and listening to us. Normally when you're the support act, you kind of have everyone going, right, I get a beer, who are they, what are they doing, and it doesn't quite work. But because of the venues we were playing, we had this amazing opportunity to have the doors shut, the lights out, and to play to all the people that didn't know who we were.
They were hostages.
In a way. Sold five more records.
That's a terrible way of describing one of your games, I've got to say.
What do you want? I can't do anything else. That's all I've got. I can make it up.
But what would you... What reaction would you normally get? Because in comedy, you get people laughing. Obviously, you don't want people laughing at you, do you?
I think you can tell. It's different for Tom and I because we're both doing different things. And it's actually, you know, after playing live a lot more than we did, we kind of are more aware of that and reflecting it and talk about it and go, hey, I didn't think that was that good. Or, no, people were really listening. I feel like I can tell when you're losing a crowd, like right now.
Like,
do you know what I mean?
Mate.
It just creeps up on you. You can just hear it slowly. There's some waving behind you. You know you're not hitting the mic.
Maybe if you put it to music.
I think it's true to a point, but I can also think your own. I think that is mixed with a genuine knowledge of something or learning. Yeah. You're losing something. But I think sometimes that is something that happens in your head that isn't necessarily happening.
Yeah, totally. But I also think that when you're playing like a small crowd, a few of those things are relatable to a big crowd. And when you play a small crowd, you get to know the feeling of, you know, if you're playing to like, Warsaw was probably like about 100 people maybe at the most. And you can pretty much see everyone's face and you know when something's connecting and you can sort of open your eyes. If you're singing, close your eyes, you open them and you can see what the room's like at that moment. And that is relatable to a bigger gig as well in some way, you know.
It's a microcosm.
Yes, yeah.
We also have our in-ear monitors in, which is very weird anyway. It's a bit like being in a flotation tank.
It's a bit like having a bath with your clothes
on. It's
like
diving, yeah. It's like,
and I think it's quite an acquired skill to know how to relate when those are shoved in your ears.
Do you... I had to do that on a TV show I did, and I really hated having the in-ear things.
It takes ages to get used to it. It's horrible.
We did it on the day.
Yeah, no,
it was
that's
my
not
TV,
fair.
It was heavy entertainment. It was my TV series, and we did it on the day, and you just like going, I've got... It's like you're in one of them Victorian diving tank things.
Yeah.
I've actually got to a point now where if I'm not... I'm very happy to take them out for a little moment because I know that I can still find my way through the set. Like just to have that little bit of hearing it. When we were playing, we finished our last tour in Berlin in the Planetarium.
Right.
And it was absolutely beautiful, but we hadn't really experienced a lot of the visuals of the space.
Did they switch on?
Yeah, they switched it all on. And this guy had taken a good... an absolute shitload of time to make this incredible visual that went with our gig, and it was incredible just to have that moment. And I know that you did it as well, Tom, where we just you took your ears out for a moment and just looked up and kind of got lost in the visuals that this guy had spent hours and hours of work doing with our instrumentals.
Was it solar system accurate?
Exactly. It wasn't. He did loads of really surreal psychedelic stuff. It was fucking incredible. It was really, really beautiful. And also, just because of time and money, you know, we hadn't had we were as much of as an audience member as the rest of them. It was incredible just to watch it all as we did the show. I mean, he'd done it completely to click track to what we were doing.
Bit selfish, though, isn't it?
Which bit? Which bit, Nick?
The bit when he forced you to be an audience member at your own gig.
Yeah. A little bit selfish.
Look what I've done.
He wasn't a listener. wasn't listening.
Yeah, a Verger album.
he so talked done at this us.
Yeah.
He had a lot of things to tell us.
I like that the audience are going, I mean, they're just watching it as well, man.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, yeah, who's actually doing this?
Yeah, no one's actually doing
who's
it.
Who's doing this? Yeah. What are we watching?
What are we watching? Who's in charge?
So it's all meta, isn't it? It's all like
it's
meta.
All meta.
Yeah, that's the thing. Where do you stand? Nick mentioned it before about sort of using your voice as instruments. Do you agree with that idea? And do you sort of see lyrics as being something you want to be sort of at the forefront, or do you see it very much as like sounds and you are using your voice?
That's
as
an interesting question. We've always done lyrics last. Well, not always, but mostly.
Because it's almost, it's just the sound of it some people use, don't they? Almost to complement what the music is.
Yeah, have you listened to some of those later Talk Talk records? That's for me, that was the first place that I found how emotive just a sound and not necessarily... Yes. And also the intrigue of a lyric. I mean, randomly, I had a conversation about this exact thing 2 nights ago because my father-in-law was there and he was like, I'd still want the vocal up louder and in front and hearing every word. And I said, I totally, you know, I knew that I had the confidence enough to go, I know what that is and I know how that works. But actually my thing, they're two different things. And that playing with that and interweaving it is kind of what Tom and I are really, really into.
I do find that really interesting, the lyric thing. Obviously, I write...
of course, we all know this.
I write songs that are... we were talking about this earlier. I don't think I write comedy songs. I write songs that happen to be funny.
Yeah,
right?
I agree.
And some of my songs do veer into comedy songs, but I think most of the time I'm not really aiming for that.
Yeah.
And but you have jokes within them and you have setups and your storytelling, so all the lyrics are very important. And when I hear sort of something like Song 2 by Blur, where it's gibberish, and you just like go, I can't get my head around how they fucking wrote that song. And it's kind of like, I think that of songs as storytelling. And then you hear songs like David Bowie kind of like cutting up newspaper headlines and then just like putting together collages and then writing songs based on that. And you just like go, I need a very literal, my songs are literal. And I think you need a very literal starting point in order to kind of like write music. And also the lyrics and the music happen at the same time.
Yeah.
Where I'll be walking down the road and I'll have a lyric and I'll sing it and then that'll be the tune.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, there's a whole Elton John Bernie Taupin thing where, well, he writes the lyrics.
Yeah, that I find.
And he writes the music and you go, how the fuck does that work?
Yeah, totally. I get that. I think it's sort of a reflective thing of how people listen to music, and it's like how I sit there. Daisy's definitely the same as you. My wife is how she listens to stuff.
Daisy.
And we have Daisy. We will go there, Nick. I know.
Don't think we've got enough time to really talk about that.
But
your father-in-law, Piers Haggard,
the original.
Blood and Satan's Claw.
Oh, God, you know, he did a talk about that the other day, yesterday.
Nathaniel did a screening of it and he came along.
Oh, did he? He's amazing. Absolutely incredible. The music's brilliant in that as well.
Absolutely brilliant, yeah. Mark Wilkinson, is he called?
Yes, I actually put it on a playlist the other day. Absolutely brilliant.
Blood on Satan's Claw.
Incredible atmospheric film.
Really,
I'd strongly recommend anyone who's listening who hasn't seen it. Have you watched Witchfinder General?
Yes.
So there's the Wicker Man, there's the Witchfinder General, and there's Blood on Satan's Claw. And Blood on Satan's
Romantic
Claw.
A Romantic Night In.
It's the least well known out of the three.
Totally.
And
Mark Gatiss
and I would
is
say
really
it's,
into
it's,
it.
It's like the third best.
I knew it. I saw it in your face. You were getting ready to get there.
I loved it. They did a display. They did a display at the BFI in the shop.
Yeah.
And Blood on Satan's Claw and the soundtrack with them. And I took a photo and I sent it to Daisy.
Yeah.
Daisy, who played my sister and uncle.
there you go.
That's it. That's all we're going to say about it.
We
had basically Daisy.
Such a good film.
Daisy's so busy at the moment that I had Piers over yesterday and we sat down and had we had dinner together while Daisy was working around us and we ended up talking about Blood and Saints Law, and it's absolutely incredible wealth of information that obviously Piers has bespoke to his experience of it, which is just unbelievable as a film, and just I totally geek out on stuff like that.
I would also say it's something that probably M. Night Shyamalan stole a lot from
totally.
For The Village.
But also I find it a lot in Ben Wheatley's films as well. There's a lot of elements in Kill List and things like that that have that kind of feeling.
It's folk horror.
Yeah, totally, folk horror. Did you ever seen The Witch?
I didn't love it.
No, but it had a lot of... It made me think of that ilk, the folk horror.
Sure.
You see it in a lot of like...
You're just dead to you. 2 seconds. Like, we're just sharing something. Then you're like...
drop it.
No, tickle, tickle.
I was thinking about The Witch, and then the sequel, The Witches.
Oh, right. What, a dull sequel?
Like Alien and Aliens. It's just like, they, you know, I prefer...
Just covering it up, bigger, better.
I was thinking about how to make that joke. I prefer the sequel, The Witches, and then I realised it didn't make any sense. It was made 30 years prior.
Oh, right.
Shut up and drop it, Nick. I was telling myself to drop it.
I did love that, though.
Sure.
I did. The film. The Witches.
Oh. It's old news, mate. Oh. What's your favourite film, Tom?
My favourite film?
We've got to that.
We've got to cover some of the fucking stuff that we were going to do.
That's not there,
I have three joint ones, different genres. Is that allowed?
Yes.
You have three joint ones?
The original...
You've got a joint
I have
one.
Two. Well, there's two joint ones and one. No, three joint... Yeah, three equal ones.
Keep it...
Anyway.
Keep it rattling along.
So...
We're losing listeners.
The Italian Job. Original, obviously.
Sure.
The Shining and 2001.
It'd be really
weird.
They're
my like, three top ones. I can't choose them.
It'd be really weird if you said...
Don't. What are you going to come up with?
If you said The Italian Job, the remake.
Yeah.
The Shining, the TV movie. Yeah. And 2010.
Yeah.
Or 2012.
2010. Yeah.
Daisy and I rewatched True Romance the other night. Do you love that or not?
Do I love True Romance? Do you know what? True Romance is one of the only films that I read as a screenplay before I saw the film.
You're not alone in that. There's quite a lot of people have done that because it was released quite a lot and people talked about it because it's Tarantino.
I think the screenplay was like on the front of Premiere magazine or something like that. They used to give them away and I read it. And then when I watched the film, I was kind of like, it's weird because I really was into Quentin Tarantino. Reservoir Dogs was like, my brain exploded. Yeah. And then Pulp Fiction, not as much, but I haven't seen it in a long time. But I do associate those two films with being a 13-year-old child.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're adult movies in any way. And then,
yeah, I guess it's Tony Scott, so it's kind of got that, like, he's got that kind of, like, he is the kind of adolescent male sort of voice of so many films. And
but with Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction, I just associate them with being like a teenager. What I fucking absolutely love Tony Scott. He's one of my favourite filmmakers. And, and I find him meeting Quentin Tarantino, I think that mix is a bit of an odd one. It's odd watching a Quentin Tarantino film that he has not directed.
Yeah,
it's fun. I like the movie a lot.
I'm going to
misquote this because I read it while we were watching it, and then I got into a discussion with Piers about it anyway. But I think there's a story with that because he directed Reservoir Dogs, they weren't letting him before Reservoir Dogs was fully finished. He had the script and they said, you're not directing this, and Tony Scott got the job. Like, he wanted to direct both of them.
Well, True Romance was his first screenplay.
Yes.
But in actual fact, Natural Born Killers, True Romance, I can't remember which way it was around, but Natural Born Killers was a screenplay, and in the screenplay someone was writing True Romance.
Yeah.
Or True Romance was the thing, and in the screenplay someone was, I think maybe Clarence was writing Natural Born Killers.
Right, okay.
And then it was this huge thing and he split it up, and then he wrote Reservoir Dogs, made Reservoir Dogs, and then by the point that it came to True Romance, that was already in development.
Yeah.
And he hadn't established himself as a director.
Have you seen the DVD one? It's got the other ending, because it was actually written with a different ending.
I've seen the other ending. Is there a sad ending?
Yeah. And it was the original. That's the original ending.
I'd like the happy ending, and I think that they're absolutely right to do a happy ending.
I totally agree.
The screenplay, I remember, is more like what you'd think of as a Tarantino.
Yes.
It's all very much cut up, and it's all in a different order.
Yeah,
whereas Tony Scott just goes, why don't you just do it straightforward?
Well, just make a nice film with a happy ending.
Yeah.
And you just
but
like
he does,
go,
he puts it all in the correct order, and you go, actually, it all works.
Tony Scott is absolutely, they were absolutely right to give it a happy ending, because you go, because Tony Scott was just like, I'm not just doing it for a studio thing. He turned, you know, this is what he said to Quentin Tarantino. He said, I'm not just doing it because the studio asking. He just said, you've been all the way through this adventure with these two kids, and you just want to see them get away with it all. And then it was just like, that was how he sold it. And then it was just like, and Quentin Tarantino was like, fair enough. But like, he won't even, I don't know. The other one is Natural Born Killers, which is, I really liked.
Yeah.
But it was around the same time as like Film Violence.
Yeah.
And I remember I watched it in my bedroom, next to my radiator, and my radiator was very hot, and I was in a hot
that could totally change the enjoyment of a film.
I was in a hot room watching Natural Born Killers, And at the end of it, I felt like killing someone.
Yeah.
Like, I came out of it so pumped up and angry. And I was just like, I think there's something in this.
Watching a film really hot.
Watching a film really hot.
Fear and Loathing is so much better when you're about 10 degrees hotter.
I don't really like Fear and Loathing. I like the book, which is why that makes me sound like a real... I like the book.
No, you don't. Not with that one. You're allowed to say it with
the
that
book,
one.
But it's the, like book's amazing, the book's 30 pages.
Yeah.
You can do it in one toilet sitting, but
really?
Fucking Fear and Loathing in the figures. But the film was kind of, oh, I don't know.
I think true. I worked in a comic book shop for 14 years.
Oh, wow.
And there's a bit at the start of True Romance where Kristen Slater takes
Patricia
Arquette's comic shop, and you think, that wouldn't work. That absolutely wouldn't work at all. He's like, she's really impressed. And also, there's a
she is supposed to be a prostitute, though.
She is,
She has been paid to go
but
to
I
the
comic.
But
I think the idea is that it starts that way, and
but then
she,
it turns into
she
that, yeah,
actually
definitely.
Becomes, she does like him,
of
right?
Of course.
It starts
anyway,
that way.
I think she's come to the comic shop because you're Christian Slater. I don't think if it's like the character isn't just going to go, do you want to come and have a look at some old comics from me? She's going to go, yeah, I'd love to. Maybe, or no, she wouldn't. She absolutely wouldn't.
Yeah.
I love the idea that you undermine the whole story by saying, actually, no, the whole time she is a prostitute. Even from start to finish.
No, what I'm saying is...
She never falls in love with him. That would completely undermine...
What I'm saying
she has
is,
to
it
rely
helps,
on him.
It helps that he looks like Christian Slater.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
That's a big thing of it, where you go, actually, you are still Christian Slater.
Yeah, right.
So I'm on board.
It's like...
Yeah. I also think the Elvis thing's really cool as well. I love that little
But they didn't have the rights to the Elvis thing.
No, so
Elvis's image, so they just have it. And which is much better.
Yeah, it's like, sure... It's like Shark in Jaws.
And you know exactly.
Can't see the whole thing. I don't look like that. It's just like the Shark in Jaws. Don't. No, just go with me and see where we land.
Okay, but it's not. I would say it's not like the Shark in Jaws. You don't just see the Shark in Jaws.
You just see the bit of the leg of Elvis. The bit of the back of Elvis.
You don't see the Shark in Jaws' shoulder. Well, Roy Scheider's doing his hair in a mirror.
Val Kilmer played the shark.
A single blue suede shoe. It's one blue suede
just
shoe.
One blue suede shoe. Scares the shit out of you. If you saw the whole thing.
No.
You don't want to do it at all, do you?
I'm not into this.
You don't want to play it. Well, let's talk about... Should
I
we
had
do
a
the...
couple of things to say. I just wanted to say that, she was a prostitute, and Clarence... actually made her reliant on him when he killed her pimp, and she had no form of income, so of course she went off with him.
Keep it light. That's
it does put a different spin on the film, though, doesn't it? You take
a it's the it's Jack Reacher. It's when Tom Cruise walks into a room and you just all the women just go. Like every time 55-year-old Tom Cruise walks into a room, all the women get moist, and they all turn around and look at him, and they all lick their lips, and they're all like, let me at him. I want to get me some of that. But it's like,
I'm so glad I asked my auntie to listen in today. Auntie Nora,
that's how they're reacting.
Hello Auntie Nora.
You can switch back on now.
It's her favourite film.
Do yourself a favour, whack on Jack Reacher.
There's a tip from Uncle Nick.
There's a 55-year-old 5'6" man that will get you wet.
But he walks into
the room and everyone acts like it's Tom Cruise. Mm. And you go, it's not. Mm. It's an undercover CIA operative, Jack Reacher.
But it's Tom Cruise.
But it's like people are reacting to him like celebrity Tom Cruise has walked into the room and they all fancy him. It's just like,
You can't stop that happening. It always happens wherever he is.
It's like the SAs were told, don't look at him!
Don't look
Why?
At him.
Is he
we
weird
need
like
it
that?
To be real, just don't look at him.
Just
around.
Look
He'll
at
charm
him.
You. He'll charm you. Don't look at his eyes, around the eyes.
So I find that funny. But, True Romance. As far away from Jaws as you can get.
Basically the same film.
So you two often work on soundtracks.
Yes,
do you have favourite soundtracks or ones that influence you, or do you see it very much as an extension of the kind of recorded music in your regular albums?
I think there's a bit of both, to be honest. Definitely, it's a different wing. Mm-hmm. Of what we do, so So there's definitely like a different set of rules, but we do try and keep it part of the same overall thing.
And do you see it as like, would you see like when you're composing a soundtrack, do you look to other soundtracks towards it, or do you just see it as what you would do as that? Is it something that you're, do you see it as a different discipline?
So we always write pre any shooting, so it's kind of, yeah, so we're really into reading the scripts, looking at locations, going to some of the locations before shooting starts or while shooting's going on, and we basically have like an album's or two albums worth of cues that we send off before the filming starts.
So then, so they edit to you?
Yeah, that's what I was
going to
say.
I totally.
So you get to fucking dictate what the fucking.
Beep, ba, 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 da, boom.
Yes.
You edit on the ba. It's a cut on the ba and the bow.
So you're basically directing the things.
Well, no. Okay, so the thing with this.
Oh my God, you've heard it here first, people.
Yeah, we directed.
Solomon Gray have come in.
Nick, we need work.
They've
stop claimed, making it sound like
claims. Claims.
We can do it ourselves. No, we. It's just it's a great way of starting the process early, of cutting to the music that you've written, so you don't have to then end up, you know, recreating the guide track or the music that they've done, and also you can end up doing a load of experimenting with the sounds of it and figure out what the director or the production house or whoever you're working with feels that is right out
it
of the collection.
It must change the pace of everything,
totally.
Though, right?
So yeah, it ruins it. Yeah. we've killed a few good shows.
I don't know how that works.
But there's two.
Well, loads of people do that.
Yeah, there's two things that happen that are quite important. One is that we don't write like
witchcraft.
Obviously, yes, obviously the witchcraft. But apart from that, yeah. We don't write, obviously, because it's before picture, nothing's been shot. So we don't write for a specific, we're not like, oh, this goes on page 3 of the script to page 5, or this goes in that bit. We'll just write stuff that feels right emotionally or covers the bases that we think are in there.
So you provide a lot of music.
We provide a library,
choose.
As it were. Right. Now, sometimes they will use most of the stuff in that library, sometimes less of it, but the director and the editor ever use none of it? Not yet, but yeah. I feel that.
Yeah, the show, the jobs we weren't doing.
They might one day.
Well, I composed the music for Psycho. Didn't use
there's a very geeky market of listening to soundtracks that didn't get used. And considering you said 2001 earlier, you can listen to that one as well, which is actually really. Have you listened to it?
No.
It's really worth a listen. You can find all these soundtracks that were written, especially for someone like Kubrick, who fell in love with a lot of the guide track that was there for 2001. But he has actually, you can find it on YouTube.
Yeah. We talk a lot about soundtracks, don't we? What's your favourite soundtrack? Or composer for film or TV?
My favourite.
Or theatre.
Or theatre. Or car.
My serious answer is my favourite sort of contemporary film composer is Clint Mansell.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
I don't know that.
He is the former lead singer from Pop Will Eat Itself.
I don't think he was a singer. Was he the singer?
No.
In Pop Will Eat Itself. He was in Pop Will Eat Itself. Remember that
Sideman. One of those.
One of the gang.
Yeah. And he did Black Swan and Moon and...
He did the Ben Wheatley... The High Rise, didn't he?
He may have
Yes, it was him. Yeah. And it was, definitely.
So, I like him a lot. Definitely,
The contemporary. Do you feel like that's an influence, or is it just... Do you feel that separate, or do you feel like...
I think when you... Yeah, I think often if someone's a contemporary of yours, albeit way more advanced, you definitely and you appreciate what they do. That you can't help but being influenced by that in some way.
Yes, as much as you can't help but being influenced by all music in the culture.
Yeah,
yeah, totally.
Yeah, exactly. So
what about you?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I just say
John Williams.
John Williams.
Yeah, there we go.
John Williams 1 and 2 and The Return of Williams. Back to Williams.
Yeah. Alan Silvestri. So what are we going to do now?
We should do the game.
Oh.
Okay.
But I think
I got really excited. The thing is, I think you've
overestimated how long the game is.
What are we doing?
The game is like a minute and a half.
Right, so take this gun.
So we've still got some more time to talk about.
We've got a bit more time.
We've got a bit more. That's the thing about all of this.
What do you want to? Do you don't? If you don't want to do the game,
I do want to do the game. We do the game every week.
Okay. Well then.
Okay. This is the game. It's called Better or Worse.
Are we doing the game?
Yeah.
I've got to press the fucking button.
Like, don't get nervous. All right. Here we go. Press it.
Do you like this film soundtrack?
This is great.
This is.
This is from. Come on, tell me. Just tell me.
Is this the game?
No, this isn't the game. Let him guess.
No, I can't do it.
We're going to sit in silence until you've guessed what this is.
This
from.
Is the worst game ever.
It's a great game.
What is it? No, go on, just say
no,
it.
No, you think you're so good. Come on.
Il Postino.
Il Postino? Do you think I'd fucking play Il Postino?
I think you would, mate. Get on board.
Il fucking Postino.
Look at me and say that. Look at you, Mike.
Il fucking Postino.
Twat. I once went to the BFI shop and I was asking about film recommendations and he was going, well, you got some, actually, you buy a membership, you can get some, like, you can get like some free DVDs. And he goes, well, this one, of course, you get this documentary. It's from the 20s. It's about Icelandic pursuit. It's quite interesting. And then he goes, all right, you can get this one. Visconti's the leopard. And he goes, well, it's the leopard, isn't it? And I loved it. I love this man who works in a BFI shop. Yeah, he loves his art house cinema, but you just wouldn't imagine he would. Yeah, I've judged him.
Yeah.
Only fucking Jews, eh, Jim?
Yeah.
Get on board, mate.
Fucking amazing film.
Right, let's do the game. The game is...
Better or Worse. And you have to say, I'm going to give you a name, and you have to say whether the next person is better or worse than the person before it.
Oh, God.
It's only based on my own opinion. So it's no real right or wrong answer.
So is Tom doing one and then I'm doing one?
No, it's a free-for-all.
Okay. Michael Douglas is your first starter name. Is he better or worse than Kirk Douglas?
Worse.
I think better.
Worse.
He is worse.
He's better. The people's pervert, Michael Douglas.
I can't believe he's 101. Kirk Douglas, that's incredible.
Michael Douglas.
He's still alive.
Imagine how old Kirk Douglas is.
He's 150 now.
He is, yeah. He's still alive. He's alive.
He's alive.
Is Kirk Douglas better or worse than Ben Affleck?
Better.
He is better.
Yes.
Is John Boyega better or worse than Ben Affleck?
Better.
Mm.
Yeah, I might say
I think
better.
They're both high cards.
I might go both high cards. I like
Ben Affleck.
Jeff Goldblum better or worse than John Boyega?
Better.
Yeah.
Is Gwyneth Paltrow
He's got an album out.
He has a jazzy one.
I know. Apparently, it's really good.
Rattle through the
game.
Sorry.
Is Gwyneth Paltrow better or worse than Jeff Goldblum?
Worse.
Is Woody Harrelson better or worse than Gwyneth Paltrow?
Better.
Is Al Pacino better or worse than Woody Harrelson?
Worse.
I'm going to say worse.
I love Woody Harrelson.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Isn't that weird?
I know,
it's true. Al Pacino. Yeah. You fucked up.
Do an accent.
Is Kevin Kline better or worse than Al Pacino?
Worse. Kevin Kline. Fuck off, Kline.
Is John Cleese better or worse than Kevin Kline?
Better.
Sorry, what was that?
John Cleese better or worse than Kevin Kline?
Better.
Yeah, that's it.
Did we get one of them
right? I told you we should have talked about it more.
Natalie, what's the
score? Nine.
Nine. That's a great
fucking
score.
Hell, that's a great
that's a
score.
Massive.
Only
score.
Michael Legg in the past has got a nine. You've John Niven.
Did he have John Niven?
He got ten.
But, I bet he did.
But yeah, you've beaten everyone else other than John Niven and Michael Legg.
What was John Niven like?
Nice. Lovely.
He was lovely. Very informative. And, you know, we only had to ask him.
How does getting 9 points on Better or Worse compare with playing the Union Chapel, guys?
It was more.
It's
fun.
Worse.
More
it's
fun.
Worse.
Yeah.
Oh.
Better.
I'm joking. Okay.
Better.
We're having
10.
One.
I get 10 now.
Yes. Yeah. You win. You win.
Yeah. I'm equal with John Niven.
Upsetting. Upsetting. Well, no, I thought you'd be grateful for coming.
We are so grateful. Honestly, Nick, can I say something? Thank you so much for having us in. Like, thank you so much, both of you.
I can't even look at you right now, Joe.
Oh, my God. Don't play that one. Do the different one. Do the puppy one.
Hey.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. It's what a lovely, what an absolutely amazing
what a
couple
set of guests.
Thank you.
Have you got anything you'd like to promote?
Just to be good to one another.
Yeah, just be kind. Nice. Wrap up warm.
If anything, I'm too warm right now.
Yeah, if you're going to have sex, put something on the end of it. So I can't remember. Okay. So we're going to end now with your favourite song.
I think I've been slaved.
You've been listening to a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.